CliffCentral.com.
Just after 8 o'clock. Ben, when it comes to foreign investment, you know it can be confusing as to what is and what isn't allowed, right? And in fact, if you are a beneficiary of an offshore trust, it was even highlighted in the 2016 budget. What happens to your overseas money when you die? There have been significant changes with regards to overseas funds. And if you don't know, SARS treats you slightly differently if you're a South African taxpayer. St. James Global have the answers for you. They've been doing this for years, and they focus on preserving and protecting offshore wealth and creating succession planning structures that tick all the boxes given all the recent changes in international tax legislation. Make sure that your worldwide assets pass on to your future heirs immediately without costs or delays. Go to stjamesglobal.com for more info. That's stjamesglobal.com. It's one word. You spell it like this: stjamesglobal.com. St. James Global, an authorized financial services provider. And you know, we talk about this stuff all the time, how you need to have some of your money overseas, but you need to make sure it's all safe and, you know, it's going to come to you when you need it. And it's not going to get you into trouble like David Cameron with the Panama Papers. You need to be on top of these things. You need to know what the hell's going on around you. All right, look who's here. It's Dan Nichols. Say hello to Dan, and he's brought a guest along. I told him, we want to know who's on your show. And he said, oh, but he's on the show. And I said, no, that's not good enough. I expect your guests as well. So he said, cool. He doesn't mind. He'll bring in superstar celebrity Con Morby, and he's here as well. Hello, you two.
Hi, how's it going?
How are we?
Yeah,
Dan, use the microphone properly. You've got lots of experience in broadcasting, but you don't know what to do with the microphone.
Well,
come on.
Can I firmly blame... is that coming through?
What's that?
Is that coming through?
Yeah, testing, testing. Do it for me quickly.
1, 2, 3, 4.
All right. That's a very weak microphone there. It looks a little flaccid. Maybe...
Flax, try and help him.
Yeah.
Can you believe the amount of penis that was up for discussion this morning?
It did set the tone rather nicely for Khan and I to descend upon the show.
Now, what season is this, Dan? The third?
Yes, we are. This is going into episode 4 of season 3 this week. So we're almost a month into our new season. And we have Khan on tonight. We've had a really nice start to season 3. You kicked us off in season 2. We've just about recovered from that. And we're now having a great time.
I think I made inappropriate jokes about Mark Boucher's eye.
I think Boucher is also still recovering from that one. But he's off at the Masters at the moment, having lots of fun.
Very tough being him.
Feel no sympathy for Boucher whatsoever.
Now, this show, aren't you running out of celebrities at this stage? Because there aren't that many famous people in South Africa. You're going to have to start speaking to ex-rugby coaches, and you'll eventually have to have cabinet ministers, God forbid.
Ooh. Well, yeah. I think what's been really interesting is finding people who you maybe hadn't even heard of, who've got really good stories or great characters. We had a guy on the show last week who you may or may not have heard of, a guy called Peter Dupree, who is an actuary. Yeah. Putting an actuary in a space vaguely related to entertainment sounds like a really bad idea. They are generally the most boring people on earth. But not only has Peter Dupree got a great sense of humor and is a great guy, he is also the first quadriplegic ever to have completed an Ironman and has been nominated for a Laureus World Sport Award in Berlin next week. He won multiple gold medals, set multiple world records. So here's this guy who's got a little bit of movement in his arms, can't use his legs, taught himself to do double backstroke, got through an Ironman in 13 hours, has this big smile on his face, tells great jokes about himself being an actuary, and just a really fun guy. And we found a few people like that who I hadn't really heard of, didn't really know, and they've come into the space and they've got really, really good stories to tell. And I think that's been the fun part. There are a lot of guys who we know, we maybe don't know in a space other than their job. So we have a sports person on, we know they can score 100 or push over a scrum or convert a penalty, but we don't really know who they are, where they like to go on holiday, what music they listen to. So we've had a lot of fun with the sports guys and got their stories. But we've also found some people that nobody had really heard of, and they've given us a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, you put me on the show, so.
I've never heard of double backstroke.
Yeah, what is double backstroke? How does that work?
So I think it's there are different types of being quadriplegic, and some people have got no movement at all.
He's got a little bit of movement
in his arms.
Now, with the Paralympics, you have different categories
Do. It's very confusing.
Like, so you have hurdles, but then you have hurdles for people with one leg, or you have hurdles for people with half a leg, or...
People go under them.
Right. I mean, it's very complex. You've got so many different categories. And don't look so confused, Khan, you know.
No, I am very confused.
I only figured this out about a week ago.
I'm still trying to picture double backstroke.
Yeah. If you imagine doing butterfly on your back, that's pretty much double backstroke.
Okay.
Great story.
But that's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, just to do an Ironman anyway is madness. Yeah. To do one when you've got that sort of physical condition is extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's an interesting... sort of show, because you get to really talk to a lot of different people. Who's the big get, though? I mean, who's the guest that you still want the most that you haven't been able to crack?
We've been trying to get Chad Leclos on the show, but Bert wants to be on the show first. So
Bert's fantastic. Bert's better value than Chad. Chad's got nothing to say.
Chad is very, very busy training. But I think each week we're unveiling more. We've been trying to get Khan for a while.
Yeah.
Our community of expatriate Belgian viewers has been desperate to see him on. So he's on. And we've actually got a clash of the beards on tomorrow night's show
Let's turn our attention to Khan for a second. I haven't seen you in a while. First of all, dude, how's the voice going?
Very well, yeah.
Are you having fun there?
Yeah, really enjoying the process and the show.
Are you?
Yeah, really.
You're not awesome. Getting bored? Apparently these shoots take forever. I mean, I don't know how I would know these things.
Well, I mean, they do, but during the process, during the actual filming, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, so. I once heard somebody speaking of the voice and saying why they like it is because, you know, it's a building as opposed to those idols judges who are always
break
just
everyone
tearing
down.
People's spirits down. But you guys, you know, it's more a process of developing and improving the
that's the ethos of the show. I think both have their place. I think, you know, obviously the allure of idols is you do want to kind of laugh at the guy that's not so good.
Yeah.
Do you have to be particularly careful about inflammatory text messages and tweets as a judge?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the fact that we've been in this industry for a long time.
What he's asking is, after my shit in January, did they sit you guys down and say, now listen, you motherfuckers, don't you dare tweet anything? Did they? Did they have that conversation with you?
Well, yeah, they kind of did say that we should just... Yeah.
The Gareth Cliff clause.
Did they put a new clause into your contract?
I'd have to admit yes.
Yeah.
Did.
Well, yeah, thank you. I just want all I want from you is honesty, Khan. I'm not trying to get you into trouble.
You've protected us,
right? And I hope they know that you can sue them if they don't do their duty. Right. Very good. We'll talk some more about the voice in a moment or two. This beard of yours is the topic that everybody wants to know about. You've grown a big old beard. Have you converted to Islam? What's the story?
No. I'm just preparing myself for the winter.
Is this a thing? Because, I mean, beards, a lot of people have... I see a lot of guys with beards at the moment.
Well, Ben's been growing his now for about 8 months.
Yeah, it's kind of official the year anniversary. It's quite something. I'm going to invest in a comb in about 2 months.
Khan, doesn't it itch and irritate you? You've never had a beard before, right? Was there a time you grew one before?
It's kind of, a little bit of a laziness thing. I grow it for a while.
But then you have to maintain it. It's not lazy. Yeah. You have to actually trim it in the right places and all kinds of things. Yeah, so it's a pain in the backside.
Well, it's a little bit easier than shaving it, I guess.
Is it? Because when it gets to that slightly long stage, it just drives me crazy. It feels so odd. It's itchy. It's annoying.
I think the initial stage is itchy and annoying.
Yeah.
But then it's quite cool to go to one of those beard barber shops and have them trim it and
tidy you up.
Yeah.
You ever get food stuck in there?
I'm sure.
That wouldn't be attractive.
There might still be a bit of wheat picks in there. If anyone's
Are you going to keep the beard for when you guys? You're still busy with the voice, right? So. You do some live shows coming up.
Yes, yeah. Right. That starts on Sunday.
Okay. Well, then this timing is perfect, Dan. You've got him at exactly the right moment because you could steal audience from The Voice for your show.
It's definitely placed not just for that, but also because we've got Hashim Amla on the show this week. So it's probably the two most famous beards in South Africa at the moment.
Oh, you're having a beard off.
Except that Khan, at least once upon a time, used to drink a lot more than Hashim Amla will ever drink.
That's for sure.
Yeah. But with this, the last thing about the beard is, Are you very thoughtful about whether or not you should have the beard on TV? Do you put any thought into those things? Because for consistency, people are going to see you on last week's episode and you don't have a beard and then suddenly you're back.
Well, funny enough, we were doing stuff yesterday, just promo stuff for The Voice.
Right.
And the director walks into the room, he's like, Khan, when you got 10 minutes, I just want to talk to you.
Uh-huh.
And I said to my team, I was like,
you know what this
100
is.
$100, he's going to tell me to shave it off.
Mm-hmm.
So then, after we were done with our vibes, I went to him, I said, you're going to tell me to shave the beard off? He's like, no, not at all. I just wanted to show you the stage layout. And
oh, so he wasn't going to bring it up.
Huh. Yeah, so I lost $100.
Okay, well, maybe they're scared of you.
When they shot the last season of MasterChef, Pete Goffwood, I'm sure you must have had on the show.
I have never seen an episode of MasterChef.
Okay, well, Pete Goffwood, one of the judges, had a beard for the duration of the show.
Yeah.
And he actually filmed part of the pilot for my show.
Uh-huh.
And we went out to have a beer afterwards. And he was lovingly stroking his chin because he'd finally got rid of the beard. And then I suddenly saw his eyes open and he just got hit with this burst of shock. And he realized that he had to be in Cape Town the next day to film the opening scene of the new season to wrap up all of the filming.
Oh,
and he'd taken his beard off. He had to fly down at 5 o'clock the next morning to Cape Town. He spent 2 hours in makeup getting, and I'm not
a
making this
beard.
Up, a yak hair beard glued on for this sweeping opening scene as they arrive
you
by boat in
kidding.
Cape Town Harbour.
For MasterChef.
For MasterChef, yak hair glued to his face.
That's unsanitary in a kitchen, surely.
So careful with that beard and just make sure you've got it very, very careful in terms of your production.
No, I'm sure, because I've already got a lot of tweets with people saying, shave the beard, hate
all right,
the beard.
Now level with me, because I watched an episode of The Voice about a week or two ago. And I saw you guys. You're very nice to all the contestants, even when they really do a cuck song. Okay? Or they perform cuck. So this one guy was on, and Lyra, she didn't turn around. She didn't want anything to do with him. She thought he was horrible, clearly.
Sure.
But then she turns around when afterwards you're all giving your comments, and she says how great he was. But if she didn't turn around, how can she say how great he is? It doesn't make sense to me. You've got to explain this to me. If she didn't choose him, she should shut up.
Well, so...
Not putting you on the spot here at all, Khan.
Obviously, the ethos of the show is to be very optimistic and positive, but also it's not... You don't see it sequentially.
Okay.
So it's shot over 5 days, and they take elements from day five, and they might put it on the first show, and elements from day three, you might put it on the second show. So maybe at that stage her team may have been full, or she may have had a voice that was similar to that. I don't
right.
know.
You've got a good team. I checked out your team. Are you confident you can beat these other three judges? They're very full of themselves. Karen Zoid, who I love. I really think she's an awesome. I mean, you tell me whether you get along with them in a minute. But Karen Zoid's smart. She's very honest. She's had an incredible career of her own. She seems very straightforward. She's not there to bullshit anybody.
Yeah.
And she thinks she's got the best team. I don't think you have to worry about Bobby and Lyra. They don't have a competitive streak like you and Karen. Am I right?
I'd probably say Karen and I are the most competitive.
Yes.
And we certainly give each other the most banter on the show.
Yeah.
Without sounding too diplomatic...
Please don't be diplomatic. You're not on The Voice now. You're here.
No.
You're a rock star. We knew you when you behaved very badly. This reality TV thing doesn't wash with me. I've been there and done that.
No,
come,
sure.
Let's be honest.
I certainly think that there's at least three people in my side that are potential winners.
Okay.
And I do think there's certain team members in each of the sides that could potentially take it.
This is tending towards a diplomatic answer.
It is diplomatic, but it's just a true. I think Lyra's probably got one of the best technical voices.
We want to win, don't we?
We are, no, undoubtedly. I think I've got... I do. Okay. I do think I've got the guys that are going to get the win.
Yes.
No diplomacy. I am the winner.
Are the rest of the Parlatones, we've met them all, they're lovely guys, I know them well, are the rest of them pissed off that this... voice thing is taking up so much of your time, because it does take up time, yeah, and it is distracting. Plus, you know, you're a band, and the minute you've done some solo work already, which must put pressure on things, because, you know, you're doing it without the rest of them.
Yeah.
And like, Khan's getting very full of himself. Is there a lot of pressure coming in here from the rest of the guys?
I think half the time they're thankful they got the weekend off.
Really? Because you guys work very hard. You're one of the hardest working bands in South Africa. You're all over the place. I see you're performing left, right, and center, very much in demand. Are they happy to have time off and leave you to do this show?
Definitely. I think that's why we work, is there's not this sort of clash of egos trying to fight for the limelight. I think.
Yeah, but you're the front man.
Yeah, and I that's the reality.
They weren't going to choose, any of the other guys. They weren't going to choose Neil to do it.
Yeah.
You know? We love Neil, but they weren't going to choose him.
Yeah,
they were going to put you on the show. Now, what I'm going to ask you is, do any of them care about the voice? Did they, like, pitch up for the recordings? Or they're like, hey, thanks for the invite, but nah, don't worry. Because I know if I invite people to Idols, they don't come.
I don't think they've even watched the trailer.
They don't care about it at all.
No.
All right. That's why I like you,
Gareth,
guys.
I would care, but it's on the weekend. And that's my
Ben,
time off.
The only one who comes is Sia. Occasionally, Flax has made it, and Kat, that's it. But, I mean, you know, this is it. And really, when you're asking Sia to come to things, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, thanks. I'm just chopped liver in the equation, that's all.
All right, good. So, Bobby and Lyra, do we get along with them?
I get on with all of them. They're all very, very cool people. I think if the reason, I guess, me and Karin have the most banter on on the show is, I think we have a relationship outside of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And generally you'll...
You've known her the longest, right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So generally, when you're more comfortable with someone, you're likely to kind of take a dig at them in jest.
Now, we know that during these shoots that you do for the show like this, you have to spend quite a lot of time with the other judges, the production crew, the director, all that sort of thing. Mm. Out of all the other judges, who do you spend the most time with?
Karin. Yeah.
Okay. And what do you guys talk about?
Well, generally we talk about the music industry. And
how terrible it is, right? You complain. No, sure, you complain about that. I understand.
But we also talk about how we can sort of make sure that the future for us as musicians isn't that terrible, and what perhaps the new model may be.
Mm-hmm. But that's where you're clever getting involved in a show like this.
No, 100%, yeah.
It gives you enormous visibility every week. Big audience. People who might not have heard you before can now get to know your music. They get to meet you. You know, it's good.
Yeah, I'm not... definitely, yeah.
No, you're happy you're doing the show. I'm glad it's going well.
Yeah.
And all indications are that it's working out really well. When do we start figuring out who the best people here are? Because at the moment, it's still a whole horde of people. I mean...
Yeah, and a lot of people get chopped every week, kind of thing. So, I guess this week it goes live, and we're down to 8 team members. You'll see 4 of our team members, each of our team members perform this week, and then half of them get cut. And the same thing happens the following week.
So, is this your team this week? Or is it everybody?
Teams,
you each have a contestant in that show?
We each have 4.
Oh, right, okay.
And out of our 4...
4 get chopped.
No, 2 get chopped out of each team. So what's that, 8?
Oh, okay. So it's very equitable. No one's losing more people at this stage.
No, I think that'll eventually happen.
Okay.
You know, when the... And it's all audience voting from here on. We get to save someone. So if we feel, I don't know, X had a not such a good performance, but we think they have... You know,
something special, you
something
keep
special,
them.
We keep them, so they...
Do you put a lot of thought into what you have to wear for these shows? Because you've always been smart about, you know, you've got a kind of an image. You're recognizable with the hats and all the rest of it, and the eye makeup that you used to do with the parlor tones. I think you still do it occasionally.
Still do that, yeah.
Right. Now, that's your thing. That's your brand. That's your image. Mm. Are you thoughtful when you go on The Voice about... almost a different image, or are there things that you've changed? I mean, how do you think about that? Because I literally grab a T-shirt, but then I'm, you know, I don't have a brand and an image in the sense of being a rock star. which you do?
I think mostly I go for something that's quite simple and plain, or kind of classical, mainly blazers and stuff. But what I've tried to do in these last couple of episodes is to have a unifying symbol or whatever that my team wore, which was a flower with a little skull on it.
That's cool.
You would have seen all my team members wear that in some form, and I had it as
like
well.
It's like Nazis.
Well, you know,
also it's a great musical tradition.
It's just a little bit like the Nazis.
Exactly like that.
Not a whole lot.
No, you had to wear the badge, right? No, I mean, that's cool, because then it brings all the guys. Do the others, have they cottoned on to this, and now they also want some kind of identifying feature for their people?
I'm sure we'll soon all will be revealed.
They're going to copy you. That's what they're going to do. All right, no, well, it sounds like it's all working out very well, and we'll keep watching The Voice. Now, when you go on to Dan Nichols' show, does he give you any idea of what kinds of things he's going to ask you? You just pitch up and you answer anything.
Yeah, I'm a bit terrified, but I'm...
It's just that Dan doesn't generally know what he's planning to ask.
That's true. Together. I've seen you, Dan. You stumble onto the set like Hugh
Like
Bladen.
Your show. It's kind of like your show. Yeah. There's no preparation. You just get an onslaught of questions.
Do you ever tell interviewers, because certainly it's never happened with me, and I would tell the audience if it did, but you've never said, you know, this is a no-go zone or any of that stuff. You're happy to talk about everything.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean... There was a stage when we were going through that vibe with our previous manager.
Yeah, well, you didn't want to talk about him.
Yeah, we didn't really want to talk about him.
Yeah.
And
by the way, are we still on the page of fuck him, or have we moved on? Have we forgiven and forgotten? And
well, yeah, I guess more forgotten, you know.
Never forgiven.
Well,
it was hard to forgive, dude.
Well, it's not even. It's just, I guess when you forget, you forgive at the same time. It's I'm ambivalent. It's whatever. It's in the past. Yeah. I'm not gonna carry
adult.
That big tug bag around with me.
It's very adult of you.
Well, you got two choices. You can either carry that with you, and it's not worth it. I'm not gonna remedy it. I can't go back in the past. And
but I mean, he took a lot of money from you guys. You know, that's your side of the story. I mean, I'm
exactly.
Whatever his side is.
Yeah.
He can crush me in Tochas. I don't even know the guy's name. But it is kind of a betrayal. I was listening to an interview with, who's the guy? The guy from Creedence. Hmm. I can't remember his name. Anyway,
your generation, not mine.
He was talking about, listen, I mean, this is long before I was born. He was talking about how a manager that they had, the guy who signed them up, he took all the money. Do you know the guys who wrote songs like Proud Mary, Bad Moon Rising, and Looking Out My Back Door? These poor guys, they get nothing from those songs now. Nothing.
So he obviously took all their publishing.
He took all their publishing, this guy.
Yeah.
And the worst part is that these dudes from Creedence were at a party once, and they met the son of this dude who swindled them out of all of their money. And the guy said, yeah, our family have a great life. I just wanted to thank you guys. He wanted to hit him.
Yeah.
Surprised that he didn't.
No, I'm surprised he didn't.
Because the music industry is full of sharks, right? Even now.
Yeah, it's such a confusing industry that I think when you're young and naive, you've just got your eye on the big prize. You know, which is to hopefully be a popular musician. That you, and I guess you're not wired like that. You're not wired to really focus on administration
and you don't want paperwork and lawyers and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're just like
you're writing songs.
Exactly. And you don't realize the gravity of a signature. It's a weird. It's amazing how much weight that little signature can carry on a piece of paper with words.
Especially if you're a young musician and you're desperate to get that exposure. Yeah, we're going to put you on stage. We're going to get you a couple of interviews. Sign away. Fantastic. 6 months later, you have a hit single and you're not seeing anything for it.
Yeah, and then you go, oh, is that what that is? Okay.
That's why I didn't go into the music business.
Of course, with all of your singing talent.
Which you saw on my show, and you promised me a phone call to say I could be on Idols, and I'm still waiting.
Well, I have no power there. You'll have to call Mnet.
Did he sign?
Please, I had to go to court to get myself back on the show. How do you think I'm going to bring you in?
I flew to London to do an audition with Kurt Darren for Gareth Cliff.
It was great.
Thanks,
it was very, very good. But Khan, how often do you get time to write songs? Are you consciously kind of doing? Is there almost a schedule of I've got to write a song this week, or do you not put that sort of pressure on yourself? Because you've been very prolific. You've written a lot of good stuff.
Well, that's my golf. You know, I guess the first and foremost, the thing I love most about music is songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
So it is my hobby. It happens to be my job.
Right.
But it's that thing that I'll do when I have some downtime. Some people play a computer game.
Where do you do this? Do you have a room in the house that's specially for this? Is there a room where you listen to music? Is there a room where you've got a guitar? Is there?
No, there's no Zen vibes.
Nothing. Could be in your bedroom, kitchen.
Yeah, I annoy everyone around
me. That's so unromantic. You must make it a special thing. Build a shrine. Yeah.
There's a little beach house in Tulum that I go to, and I'm joking.
No, I was going to say that. No, that sounds more like a rock star. What kind of house do you have? I'm interested about what sort of living arrangements are we talking about?
It's just a normal house, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom.
What does it
look like inside? I mean, what sort of house do you have? Because your guy thinks about these things.
There's a lot of art.
Mm-hmm. What kind of art?
Well, it's art that I've kind of had a connection with. So Neil's a really good painter, and I've got some of his art in my house.
Has he made you pay for it?
No, he didn't.
Oh, good. I was going to say.
Although I should. You know, I should support the... and there's a... We did a show years ago with a charity group called Zip Zap Circus. I don't know if you've...
I remember something like that, yeah.
And so what happened is we would perform while the circus unfolded around us. Mm-hmm. And while this was all happening, there was a really famous South African artist, Paul du Toit.
Yes.
That was painting a depiction of what was unfolding on stage in his weird...
Is it very abstract?
It's very abstract. Okay. It's like a Picasso kind of vibe.
Oh, nice.
And massive. It was about as big as this wall.
So it's, 4 meters by 3 meters almost, yeah? All right.
The frame. It's very big. So.
Wow. And you've got that up in your house.
Yeah, so what we did is we did a dress rehearsal for the press, mm-hmm. so they could see what the show was about, and then there was the actual evening, which was had an auction, and mm-hmm. his painting was auctioned off. But during the dress rehearsal, he obviously did a painting, and I said, what are you going to do with that painting? And he was just like, oh, I was going to give it to my son for his birthday, but are you interested? I'm like, yeah.
That's amazing.
Very interested.
And it's you guys. Is there sort of an idea of the fact that it is you? Or does it just
look
like...
Well, there's a lot of chaos on the canvas, right. So yes, yeah. Must be.
Must be you guys. Yeah, there's chaos. And you've been clever because really the Parlatones are probably the only band who's really cracked this whole commercial thing in a very big way. You did songs especially for commercial purposes. You wrote kind of jingles for ads. You launched two wines.
Three wines.
Yeah. You've really done a lot of that kind of thing. Are you seeing a lot of back end out of that? I mean, does that pay off? Has it been a worthwhile thing to do financially?
I'm sure it was.
Oh, but, right. You know, it's part of the...
That's part of part the of legacy. Oh.
All right. Well, I'm not going to make you go back down that road. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got the Dan Nichols Show. Now, Dan, if Khan is the level of your guest you're going to have here, who else can we expect to see?
So we've got Hashim Amla on the show with us as well this week. And then...
famous hockey player,
Famous hockey player.
Right.
they're actually kind of... Hashim's a very quiet guy. He's quite softly spoken, but he's got a very dry sense of humour.
He has a sense of humour.
He does indeed.
Good.
And he's got a couple of a couple of hobbies you might not anticipate.
Like quilting.
That's the first thing I was thinking of.
Yeah. Wow.
He stole the words from him.
Yes,
he quilts his beard.
We'll put that to him on the show.
All right.
So we've got Hashim coming up. Kagiso Rabada's on the show next week, the young fast bowler.
He made some waves this year, huh?
He did indeed. He's still he's 21. I mean, he's really just starting out on what he's going to be.
Dan, let me ask you something. These Proteas. What a bunch of losers.
Yes, Fakile.
No. I don't have... Look, I know less than Fikile does.
Danny's about to share a theory with you about sponsorships and things.
I don't understand how these companies sponsor them. I don't know why anyone would want to have their logo anywhere near the Proteas. When last did they win, Ben?
1998, they won a Champions Trophy.
What the? You touch these guys, it's like poison. I mean, Pinochet won more elections than they've won trophies.
So they might not have won too many trophies. They've won a huge number of test matches, but set aside the results. For me, the measure of the reach that these guys have is that every time one of the cricketers engages me in something on Twitter, we have a chat about something, whether it's AB or Faf or JP or any of the guys, within the course of the next hour or two, I get dozens and dozens of messages from hashtags with sort of Adip Patel 16.
Yeah. With messages all in Hindi. Like, you don't understand a goddamn word.
I get messages like, "Hey, Nikhil, how's batting?" Because they kind of think, well, I must be part of this whole cricket setup.
And that makes you happy? You think that's important in the world, that you're getting these messages from illiterate people in a part of the world that you don't know, you don't care about?
Well, I think it's very sweet, but I think it does illustrate.
Wouldn't you rather have the Proteas win? That's what I'm getting at.
And they would rather win. I think a T20 tournament you don't pay too much attention to because it's a lottery. But you've got a
TV audience, though.
They do, but they're still watching. I mean, it's absolutely massive. And if you look at the numbers and the number of people involved, especially that, not just that subcontinental market, but if you look at a big cricket website, ESPN Cricket Info is the biggest, biggest sports website in the world, a huge number of people who are following that website aren't based in India or Pakistan or Sri Lanka, as what you'd think would be your three base countries, with India in particular. They're based in North America because your migrant population over one, two, three, four generations living in Wisconsin or Milwaukee or somewhere in San Francisco, but still absolutely mad about cricket.
They don't get to see any live cricket.
Well, they're starting to, because you've now got, I think it's a division of ESPN, who've bought rights for the North American market for cricket, which seems crazy, but you've actually now got millions of people in North America who have an Asian background who are interested in watching cricket. And so as a commercial product, whether the team wins or loses, there's still absolutely massive interest around the world. And also you've got a lot of these guys playing in a tournament like the IPL, which is underway now.
But so, the whole point of sponsoring a sports team is though they winners. And you look like a winner.
Well, not necessarily. It's getting exposure.
But then, why don't we support...
What's one of the cleverest sponsorships in rugby at the moment? Investec sponsorship of Super Rugby, but not as a whole. They've just sponsored the New Zealand section. So we have Vodacom here in South Africa. Australia has another brand. And Investec looked at the New Zealand market. It was the most inexpensive market to sponsor, but they still get all of the exposure because we're watching the Investec logos on screen whenever we watch
South African teams
play against
winning
Kiwi
teams.
So
winning team. But that's my point. Winning teams. The New Zealanders are the best at rugby.
Perhaps.
Sponsor them. That makes sense.
New Zealand's not a massive market, but it's exposing their brand to a far bigger market, exposing it back to South Africa, into Australia and the rest of the rugby world by taking a space that wasn't as expensive as the others.
All right.
So there are a lot of aspects to why you sponsor and what motivates
it. I would, if I were one of these sponsors, I'd pull out. I don't understand why you'd want to back these guys. Losers.
Speaking of guests, though, Dan, when are you going to get Hanukkah Meyer on your show?
Yes, come on. When are you getting him on?
This is one guy everybody wants to hear about and see.
And you could handle him, right?
We've looked at it. It hasn't happened yet, but I think it may well. This season, possibly, if not early next season. I think he probably, rightfully so, wanted a little bit of time away from the limelight. New Springbok coach gets announced today, and it is a job that I really, really, really would not want.
No.
There are a few more politically charged jobs in the world of sport than that of Springbok coach. And I think Heineke, after... not a bad career. He finished third in the World Cup. He was a very passionate man. Loved what he did. I thought he was going to have cardiac arrest half the time he was coaching the team, screaming at his walkie-talkie and almost falling over. But I think he needed a little bit of time to catch his breath. But we'll see more of Hanukkah Meyer. He's a good rugby man, and he's a good coach. And I'd like to see him back, not a Springbok coach, but in a rugby space. And we should have him on the show in the not-too-distant future.
Now, who is the who's the most difficult guest you've had to deal with? Come on, level with me here, so that I know and I can avoid them.
We had a challenging show where we had Luis Ogolo on the show. Yeah. Luis is one of the funniest people in South Africa.
Hysterical.
He's a towering figure and an immense presence. Mm-hmm. And the other two people we had on the show were Caroline Wastman, who just completed the double of winning the Two Oceans and Comrades. From being an accounts lecturer to this running superstar, a wonderful story. But she just ran the Comrades 2 days before, and she's quite a quiet person naturally. And then Mornay...
So it was like pulling teeth.
Well, it wasn't so much that. It was her and Mornay Morkel was the third guest. And Mornay also, incredible gentleman, doesn't butt in. He's just a really quiet guy. So we had two people who were quite reserved by nature, and then this one flamboyant comedian. So trying to get that balance.
So I'm guessing Loiso took over the show.
He
and
did.
These other two, you had to almost like when an animal in the zoo is hiding in its little shelter and nobody ever sees it, and you say, no, there's a polar bear there, and the polar bear never comes out. You have to entice it out with steak.
I think it was more they were sitting there, and Luisa was being incredibly funny, because that's what Luisa does. He's a very, very funny man. And so they were sitting there laughing their heads off, and I was having to sort of try and rein him in a bit so we get a little bit of the other guys out as well. And that was season one, when we were still only half an hour. We're now into our third season. We've got a full hour for the show, which just makes life so much easier. You don't have to stop conversations, and you're not having to stage manage the interaction quite so much. And I'd have Lisa back in a flash. We'd just make sure we had a couple of guests on either side who were able to give as good as they got, I suppose.
Sure. All right, it's time for us to do a little sports quiz. Ben versus Dan.
Ben, the overwhelming favourite here.
Well,
he's unemployed.
Who knows?
They can sit around all day watching sports.
Who
on the
knows?
Internet.
Ben prides himself on being a big sports fan. He never says he's an expert, but I think he is a kind of an expert.
Well, I have to read a lot. That's why I'm here.
And Dan is a massive sports fan, and he could be an expert because he speaks to a lot of the people in sport every day. A lot of these people are his friends. So let's get into it, gentlemen. And Khan, if you want to join in, if you know anything about any of this stuff, Mubs, if you want to join in, then come on down.
Okay.
The most important thing is that whoever it is beats either Ben or Dan.
All right.
So let's start with you, Dan. Which Springbok center had to have his appendix removed in the 1906 or 07 tour of the UK and France?
Oh, if it's 1906, that would have to be Christian Stewart, because A, he's that old, and B, he's the worst behaved rugby player in the history of the game, and I'm surprised it wasn't more, and there was probably a rash involved as well.
Great answer. No, Yapi Kriche is the answer. Ben,
that was my second guess.
A scrum half once captained the Springboks for four tests, all of them lost. Who was it?
I'm going to go with Nelly Smith.
That would be correct. I don't know how you knew that.
Nelly Smith.
There isn't the slightest whiff of setups to this, is there?
In his quest, come on, Dan, don't give up yet. In his quest to break the four-minute mile, Roger Bannister had two major rivals at the time, aiming to beat him to the mark. Australian John Landy, who else?
Dun, 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 dun. Roger Bannister. I know that he was wearing a slightly inexpensive, almost paper-like looking white running outfit. And this was before you could get direct flights from Kenya or Ethiopia into London, so it wasn't one of the natural runners. I'm going to go with Johan Buerter.
No, that would be Wes Santy. So far, 0 out of 2 for Dan and 1 out of 1 for Ben. Ben, let's try and even it up. What is Andre Agassi's father's name?
Mike Agassi.
Mr. Agassi.
He was that psycho who gave his son ephedrine and speed.
That's right. Mike Agassi. Well, we'll give Khan a half a point and Ben 1 point.
Yay!
So now Ben's...
At least I'm on the board, Dan.
Ben's firmly in the lead. 2 points to 1.
Khan is coming second.
All right.
Dan is seventh.
Fastest answer first. Which Mexican tribe is generally regarded as the greatest natural distance runners? Anybody?
Yes, me.
Mubs, you know the answer.
The Tarahumara Indians.
All right, Dan, we set you up.
I never have guessed.
If Mabali knew the answer, she actually said...
Of the Tarahumara Indians.
Good Lord. Is that for real, Ben?
The Tarahumara Indians, yeah. There's a great book about them. It's called Born to Run.
You've actually read it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Who doesn't? Oh, Dan hasn't.
Who hasn't? Yeah.
Who hasn't? No, nobody else in the room.
Nope.
Can't believe we're getting about? Instructed on literature by somebody who went to Weinberg Boys High.
Barely spent any time at school. He was feral most of the time. Yeah. So you watched the Masters, obviously.
Yeah, I did. I was up three of the four nights till closing time. I was over there in 2008, watched when Trevor Immelman won. It's one of my more memorable sporting experiences. Watched again, and it's just such an extraordinary event. It's difficult to describe just how electric it is being there when you watch it on television. It's so pristine, there's so many people, and there's a remarkable sense of tradition. You can leave your chair next to a green and then wander off for a couple of hours, mm-hmm. come back, and your chair will still be there sitting at the front of the green, empty and ready for you, and you watch the golf being played. And it was just a really special experience, and watching on TV. Very happy for Danny Willett. He's a great guy, lovely guy. Jordan Spieth should have won it.
But, no one would have picked him, right? Danny.
I thought he was probably going to be the chief contender, but I still thought Jordan Spieth would win it. I liked Lee Westwood coming through. Westy's also a great guy, and I'd love to see Westy win a major. He hasn't won one, and he showed that maybe there's still
a chance. Do you ever bet on sport?
I don't. Hypothetically, and sort of in my head, I think, I definitely would have put money on him. But I haven't. Just something I've never really got around to, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm not a big gambler either.
Well, you know, the only reason that Jordan Spieth didn't win is because Ben backed him.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
I've got this annoying curse. It's ruining my love for sport.
And we've been testing it out for a while now. Every side, every team, every individual that Ben backs absolutely loses.
So could we back Bafana's next opponent, the Springboks next opponent, the Proteas next opponent?
Well, I have to, because my favorite golfer, my two favorite golfers shot 80 in the first round of the Masters. Then my curse was so bad from being a Stormers Arsenal fan for so many years, I thought, okay, I will support Barcelona. They lose the very next game. The 39 games done. They lost to Real Sociedad over the weekend.
Nobody even knows where that is.
Well, I barely knew who they were, but I'm backing them.
It's a small communist football team somewhere in Spain.
It's terrible. Like, so I watch with such sort of muted enthusiasm now. I can't. Sport's dying inside.
Do you watch or play any sport, Khan?
Yeah, now and again I watch sports, and I played a lot of sports in my high school years.
He's a golfer.
No, he's not.
Yeah, I've played golf with you. He claimed this outlandish handicap and then beat all of us when we played
really?
The last time.
Well, it's maybe because I had the handicap. No, I'm really not a good golfer.
Yeah, but decent.
You've actually had, before you got into music, you've had jobs, like real hard work jobs, like you were in IT or something, right?
I worked for MWeb as a salesman.
Right.
And then I was
don't know this about you.
I was
you
a broker.
Sold insurance.
Oh, yeah. Insurance, financial advisor.
Was that the worst experience for you?
No, I actually preferred that job.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you know.
To being in the pilot tent.
There was a lot of freedom in the job because it was commission driven.
Mm-hmm. And were you quite good at it?
Yeah, well, I hit my targets and no one gave me, there was no real boss saying, hey, you need to be at 8 and leave at 5 and... As long as you're hitting your targets,
that is that's not something you see often. As someone who can actually do a corporate job like that and then go into music, or you know, the other way around.
Well, I think it allowed me the freedom to do music because I could leave early to go to gigs or
tell the truth. You were bored to death
at times
with the insurance.
Are there any simmering hits waiting? A sort of a number one about paying your premiums on time?
Or... Definitely not.
I think that this all the stuff that's going on at the moment is all very exciting politically. I don't know about you, but I like what's happening in South Africa right now, that this place is unpredictable. I mean, you had the Guptas cutting and running over the weekend. Who knows where they are? Some people are saying they're in India. Some people are saying they're in Dubai. Nobody seems to know what the hell's happening here.
I'm sure Hollywood's waiting to write this script.
They got it right. And this president of ours is a cartoon character.
Who would play him? Forrest Whitaker, maybe.
Who would play the president
in Zuma the movie?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I think Kulibusa would play him because he would make sure he's involved in the pay of the movie.
No, I think
Snoop Dogg. He's got the same demeanor. Doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, that's a very good suggestion.
This laid-back vibe.
Much better suggestion. Are you very involved on social media? I mean, do you feel you have to be a lot of the time, or is it something that you like doing?
No, I feel like I have to. I'm probably the world's worst at...
Right.
He actually tweeted me this morning and then asked me if I was on Twitter later.
I retweeted you. I'm really good at retweeting.
but you don't... It doesn't give you much joy, right? Social media. It's not
something...
It's
obviously...
You have to do
it. You have to do it as part of the job. Hmm. I would not... I don't understand it. I wouldn't be on it if it wasn't for my job. I don't need to communicate with my friends.
I imagine you're the kind of guy, maybe you check your email twice a week.
No, I check that all the time.
You
on my phone.
Oh, so are you compulsive about it?
No, definitely not, yeah. I mean, I check it, well, you'll obviously, look, I don't have any notifications on my phone, so I might check it.
Okay. I don't like to check my email on my phone.
I can't square that. I send you an email, I get one back like three minutes later.
Yeah. Huh.
But that's business.
No, Dan, you still can't be on the voice. Yeah.
So you're quite administratively clued up. I mean, you keep your affairs in order, quite disciplined.
Well, to a degree.
It's almost disappointing, that, isn't it? Because you expect the rock star to just have a retinue of air hostesses and throw TVs out the window and be
Keith Moon from The Who
running down Rivonia Road naked at 4 o'clock in the morning. And he's just doing his admin and fondly remembering his days as insurance broker.
fondly remembering his
days. Yeah, you're very sedate, but I think you're in a happy place. I mean, you seem to me to be very self-satisfied in a good way. I don't mean like in an arrogant, nasty way. It seems to me like you've got everything together right now. Is there anything that you're looking for that you don't have? What do you want?
No, not really.
Really? Yeah. Happy. We're 100% happy.
Yeah, if anything, which is my own fault.
You want a witch? What?
Yeah, a little broomstick.
What's
I think the one thing I've always been searching for is maybe a bit more balance, but I bring it on myself.
You mean work and...
Yes, work and
downtime.
Yeah. Because even when I have downtime, then I get bored after like 3 days. I'm like...
Yeah, do you have hobbies and things that you do? You said Neil paints.
Yeah, Neil paints, yeah. I mean... Like, sport will be my hobby. I play a lot of tennis and squash, and, you know, when I'm down in Cape Town, friends of mine have got an indoor soccer side, so I'll...
That's cool.
...kind of join them for few weeks that I'm there. But, and golf, I go and hack around now and again.
Right.
It's not my favorite thing. It's a big investment in time for very little reward. That's my version of...
Well, just stop playing with Dan, then. Golf's a lot more fun when you play with nice people.
No, sure. Well, it is actually about the company. So,
why did you have Karpinski on your show? He'd be a lot more entertaining than some of these South African celebrities.
No, that'll never happen because Dan will abuse me, then I'll abuse him back, and then before you know it, his show will just spiral out of control.
It could actually be very entertaining.
And you'll be set up when you go on his show.
Here's what you do, Dan. I'll tell you how you get a ratings bonanza on the show. You bring Karpinski on, but you tell him to bring his girlfriend, and you just have Daniela sit there and you just have the camera on her the whole time. Even when Ben's talking, we don't need to see him. Just put the camera on her and the ratings will roll in. People will phone each other and say, have you seen this woman on this Dan Nichols show?
As you can see, Gareth values my participation on this show.
Your contribution.
I've met Daniela as well. I actually know the agency that she came from. And, she's, you can actually, it's very, very difficult to still pick up the Ukrainian accent. Just on some of the verbs, it just comes through. But for somebody who arrived off a website from Kiev, she's absolutely lovely and obviously slightly disappointed with what she arrived to, given the money that was paid. And I believe the credit card didn't go through initially. But she's magnificent.
Are you planning any big trips anywhere in the next little while?
Yeah, so...
You get to go to some pretty impressive sports events. You were talking about the Masters and you were at the Rugby World
the
Cup
Laureus
last
Awards
year.
Next Monday in Berlin. I'm actually hosting the Laureus Academy dinner on the Sunday night.
They asked me to vote for the Laureus Awards. But they're not going to give me a trip or anything, right?
No.
Motherfuckers.
Don't do it.
I went and did it out of the kindness of my heart, and I didn't even know half the names of the people that I was giving awards to. what happens there?
So that's basically the Oscars of the sporting world. So that's next Monday night. Some big names. Messi's up for an award.
Serena.
Serena.
That's a surprise.
The winners.
Right.
The All Blacks up for Team of the
Year. Isn't that Serena? I mean, let's stop messing around here. Isn't Serena the greatest sports person in the world right now?
You'd be her. I think you'd sort of between her and Steph Curry would probably be your two contestants, I'd reckon.
Who's Steph Curry?
I have no idea. Yeah. Who is Steph Curry?
The Golden State Warriors basketball player who's just been in extraordinary form.
Yeah, I mean, you throw Novak Djokovic in there as well.
No,
yeah,
I'd say Djokovic.
I don't think Djokovic is at the same level of domination of sport.
No, Serena has just cleaned up everything.
And you almost get the feeling sometimes
she did choke last year. The US Open.
She did.
And she'd handled it terribly. So for that, she shouldn't get that award just based on that.
But she almost looks as though sometimes she kind of forgets halfway through a set that she's playing in the final of a Grand Slam event and then loses the set and then suddenly remembers again that she is and wins the next one, 6-love. She is extraordinary. I've got a huge amount of time for her. And I think she needs to win. Ben will correct me here because, as we saw, he's the expert on sport. I think she needs two more to go level with Steffi Graf. For all-time singles titles in Grand Slam tennis, but she has. If you give there was that big gap when she and Venus didn't really play quite so much tennis, and then
she's come back with a vengeance.
I'm not sure if she'll.
Who do you really want to meet, Dan?
Who
would be your sports hero that you'd love to meet?
I've been lucky in that I have met a huge number of them. In terms of people still. I'd love to meet a walking, talking, smiling Michael Schumacher because I'd love to see that he could recover.
No chance of that, dude.
It doesn't look good, unfortunately, but one lives in hope.
What are they doing with him at the moment? Is he still holed up on machines? And...
Yeah, he's back home. They've been incredibly tight on what information gets out.
Yeah.
But he's back home, his wife and family looking after him. They've built a $10 million medical facility at their home to look after him.
But he's from what we understand, he's totally,
Yeah, conjecture. I mean, I'd love to say he's actually sitting at home having breakfast at the moment, but it sounds like he's really battling. And for me, it's such a scary story because I go skiing most years, and all he did really was fall off and hit a rock under some snow. And I've been off-piste most times I ski, and it could happen so, so easily. And the fact that it hit him, and he actually stood up and was talking, and there was a bit of blood, and then he just keeled over. It's a gruesome story.
It's pretty hardcore, huh?
It would be lovely to have him back. It's unlikely, but you live in hope.
Wow. Is he the greatest Formula One driver ever?
Oh, yeah, but the great thing about these debates is you can have them for hours.
Well, that's
weeks
what
and
that's
years.
What people like to do.
You think that, and then you watch a movie like Rush, which it showed James Stewart, and it was just a really cool looking guy. I've had the chance to spend a bit of time with Alain Prost, who's a Frenchman, so he's a little quieter perhaps than some of the others, but. All these guys have done extraordinary things. I Schumacher for me, but then I watched Schumacher and I didn't watch some of the other guys. I did an event with Stirling Moss a few years ago.
Oh, wow.
Won events years ago. Sheesh. And what was great about that, he was 80
years old. He didn't have a colostomy bag at the time.
Well, he was 80 years old at the time and was gleefully recounting his first visit to South Africa where he was signing cleavages on Clifton Beach.
Nice.
So you have this 80-year-old man fondly remembering back to
scrawling his
name.
I like the sound of this guy. He seems like he's got stories to tell. Now, Khan, with The Voice, just one final thing. If Bobby or Lira win, are you planning to... cause some outrage on the show.
I will sue Ebnet, yes.
Yes. 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. You sit closest to Lira. Does she ever have any disgusting habits? Like, does she pick her nails, or does she fart, or is there anything going on there that we need to know about?
Yeah.
No?
She's a serial farter.
Really?
No.
On the record. I'll just cut the no out. Flax, when we edit the podcast, cut that no out and then just put in laughter. Ha ha! Oh, that's terrible. I can't believe Lira farts the whole time. How disgusting. Listen, you two, it's lovely to see both of you. All the best for the show.
Thank you very much.
Khan, we will hopefully catch up with you soon and with the rest of the guys. Give them our regards. Cool. And good luck with the rest of your show. And we will, Dan, we'll all be watching.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Good
for
man.
Your time.
Lovely to see you. Ben, Mabs, thank you very much. Let's wrap it up with some unnews for this morning, and we will see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Here's what you need to know. Today is President Jacob Zuma's birthday. Did you know that?
I'm just finding out now on Twitter.
Wow. Yeah. 74 is the magic number this time around. He's 74 years old. Sheesh. It will be a normal work day for him, though, followed by a low-key celebration with family at his Pretoria residence. There were plans for bigger celebrations, but those fell through after certain businessmen left the country with a heavily laden private jet destined for Dubai. In the nuclear fallout area of Fukushima in Japan, wild boar are on rapid increase, apparently, growing in both size and number. They're the only beings that inhabit the off-limits contamination zone, a zone likened to that of Chernobyl. Nearby residents are claiming that the boars are starting to morph into monsters, and nearby farmers are becoming frightened. Japan has offered a special hunting concession to China for the region to nullify the threat, but even China won't go there. So scary are these beasts. Not even they want to eat these things, and that says something, because you know the Chinese will eat anything. And today, Saru announces their new Springbok coach. Fikile Mbalula is in a flat panic. He's struggling to find the right outfit for the announcement event. He has WhatsApped Kevin Hart and Floyd Mayweather for fashion advice, but has gotten nothing but blue ticks in return. It's tough being Fikile. We will see you tomorrow. Have an excellent day, and be good. Coming up next, Timothy Maurice. And plenty of other good stuff through the course of your Tuesday. Keep it on cliffcentral.com.